Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I was just a 21-year-old who was in a position where music was happening, going out was happening, alcohol was happening, and I was consumed by all this.
Hello and welcome to Love Lives, a podcast from The Independent where I, Olivia Petter, will be asking different guests about the loves of their lives. Today, I am thrilled to be joined by the brilliant two-time Brit Award nominee, musician Tom Grennan. He has two hugely successful albums under his belt, several awards, and a new highly anticipated third album called What Ifs and Maybes. I'm really excited to chat to Tom all about his career in music and the loves of his life. So let's get started. Hello.
Hello, that was an amazing intro.
Thank you. I mean, it's amazing your career, which I can't wait to talk to you about. So it all happened super, super quickly for you. I think you were performing in pubs to like 20, 30 people. And then 5-6 months later, you were playing in front of 75,000 people at Wireless with Chasing Status. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a bit about how you got into music and how this kind of all happened for you? Because originally, you were thinking of maybe going into football?
Yeah, football was like the dream when I was a kid. And then I realised I wasn't getting any better at football. So I played for a few teams, got dropped from a few teams, and I had to make a decision of what I wanted to do. And I thought, I really love acting. Got into National Youth Theatre and stuff like that. And music was never a thing at that point. So I was like, I want to go and do acting. Some of the music boys at school heard me singing at a party and they were like, do you want to join this band and help us do their A-level band thing? I was like, do you know what? I'll give it a go. And I gave it a go and I loved it. And I saw the reaction of people and how I made them feel when singing. My voice didn't sound the way it sounds now, but there was something there and I loved it. So we did the band thing for a while in my hometown in Bedford. And it was a bit like, remember Skins?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, of course. Like, we used to like put on little gigs around Bedford and like the whole school would come.
Oh, really?
And like everybody, it was a bit like that,
yeah.
That kind of vibe. But then them lot were like, oh, we're going to go to uni and study. So I was like, oh, well, I thought we had an amazing band. We weren't amazing. But then I was like, well, I don't really know about music. All I can do is sing. I never wrote songs before. I never played a guitar or an instrument. So I was like, well, I know that I want to get out of Bedford. So I applied for different unis and doing acting. And that's what I did. And I moved to Twickenham and did physical theatre. Loved it. Gave me the chance to, like, I don't know, just be creative, meet creative people. But I really loved what music did.
Mm.
So I picked up a guitar at uni, kind of like hibernated for my first year of uni and just learnt to play guitar, only a few chords. And then I started to write songs. I had this little notepad from when I was at home from different things I'd write in, but these weren't songs in my head. These were just like words to help me get through a period of time where it was where I first like realised what like mental health was. I was attacked in Bedford and had my jaw broken and stuff like that. And I didn't, yeah, it was bad. And it really, like, I don't know, taught me about myself and these are the little notes I was writing. Anyway, I went back to the notepad when I was at uni and realised that these words I was writing were actually song lyrics. So these little notes that I've been learning on guitar, I started singing the words that I'd written down, and then they became songs. And I was like, right, this is what I want to do, and that's what I did. Wrote loads of songs, well, like 6 or 7 songs, in my room at uni, and was like, right, I need to go gig. So that's what I did, and knocked on loads of doors, just every pub I could, every open mic I could. My friend set up like a thing at uni where I'd be playing every week, and did that for a year. And luckily one day there was some people in a pub and they heard my songs, and the rest is history. But it does feel like a long time, a quick time, sorry, like it's happened so fast, but like I've been working really hard to get to where I am now, and I've still got loads more to do. So yeah.
Is it that saw you there?
A guy from Sony.
Wow.
Yeah, so then this guy from Sony then kind of took my email, mm-hmm. and then the next morning I had like loads of emails from different labels.
Wow.
And different lawyers, different publishers, all that kind of stuff, and I didn't have a clue what to do.
I was going to say, when that guy came up to you after the gig, were you, obviously like that's, I presume that's what you kind of wanted to get out of it, but for it to actually happen like that, were you like, I've been discovered?
Yeah, kind of. Like, I think for me, I didn't know really, like obviously I knew what a record deal was, I knew that, but I never had that in my thoughts. Yeah. I was just singing because I liked making people happy, if I'm going to be honest. Like, I never thought I want a record deal, I want this and that. But when I had them emails, then that popped into my head. I was like, oh yeah, like there's a record deal, I can do that. And so I got signed in the end of my second year of uni. I wanted to finish uni, so I had a bit of time where I was going in the studio and then doing uni and things like that. I'd never really been in a studio before, and then I've met Chase and Status, and we wrote All Goes Wrong. I had that little song in my bedroom at uni, and then we kind of expanded and on the song, and yeah, it went mad.
And so what was that like for you, going from that kind of those two very, very different levels, and then suddenly having all of this attention on you and your music and your talent?
Mm-hmm.
What did that do just to you as a human being, as your brain? Like, how do you handle that?
Honestly, I've not really thought about it. I've just done it, and I've just put myself in it.
Yeah. Because if you think about it too much, probably sends you a bit mad.
Yeah, definitely. But I've always thought, even when I was a kid, that I was going to do something pretty mad. I never knew what it was going to be, but I always had this thing where, and it's, I don't know why I did it when I was a kid, but I used to look at myself in the mirror and always talk to myself and say, you're going to do this, everyone's going to know your name, and all this kind of...
Oh, really?
Yeah, I did when I was a kid, yeah. And I thought it was going to be like at a football stadium or something like that, but it turns out it's music, which
But I feel like all of those things are connected in a way, isn't it? Because if you're playing on a football field in front of thousands of people,
mm-hmm.
you're on stage, like doing a play or performing music, it's all about performance, I guess. So maybe that's the thing that's kind of always sort of been
Definitely.
Within you.
I've always wanted to perform. Mm. I've always wanted to catch people's attention, whatever it is.
And what was the fame like, the fame side of things? Because, you know, talking to yourself in the mirror saying, everyone's going to know your name, like that's one thing. And I think we have a very different idea of what kind of celebrity and being in the public eye might be to what it actually is.
Yeah.
Do you look back on when you kind of first rose to fame, back when that song came out, now, and think that you handled it in a way that is very different to how you handle it now? And have you kind of learnt different coping mechanisms?
Definitely. I think when I was like 21.
Yeah, which is very young to be very, very famous and successful.
I was 21 and I didn't really feel pressure, but I had a bit of money, and I also had like the wrong people around me. So
what do you mean?
I mean people who, I don't know, some people took advantage of it. Also, I took advantage of it, so I'm not blaming them people,
yeah,
by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah.
Like I was just a 21-year-old who was in a position where music was happening, going out was happening, alcohol was happening, and I was consumed by all this stuff. So I was probably an egotistical 21-year-old who thought sun shines out of his ass or something like that, basically. And I fell into, I don't know, a lot of problems. It was just to do with like London life too. So I moved home, and that was the best thing for me. And now my coping mechanisms I hate the word calling myself fat. I still get the training and I still do normal things. Do you know what I mean? Just people come and say hello and that's sound. But now it's like completely different. Like I need routine in my day to day just to get myself on a level. I need exercise. I need good 8 hours sleep. Like I sound boring, but like I feel like to do this job at a 10 out of 10, you need to be an athlete, and that's what I'm like trying to be. And
yeah, but I think you have to. Like so many musicians that I know, like the touring is relentless.
It's mad.
Traveling like that is crazy through different time zones. Like you have to be in really kind of fit condition mentally and physically, and it's wild when you think back to sort of like the Stones days of like the wild rock and roll. Like how did they do that?
I don't know how they did it. I do not know, but some people can do it. Yeah. Like some people can run on them fumes, but for me I'm too lively anyway. Like I'm too bubbly and I'm too like, so put all that other stuff involved in, you get like an extra me for like 12 hours, and then for the next week I'm dead and out, and I wouldn't be able to perform, I wouldn't be able to do this kind of stuff, I just wouldn't be able to function properly. So yeah.
Did anyone, because obviously you would have probably met a lot of other people, sort of more experienced people in the industry when you first started out, did anyone kind of give you advice on how to tackle it?
Not really, nah. Again, like, I haven't really been around, and I'm not, like, famous people, if I'm going to be honest. Like, I've been to a few things, award evenings and all that kind of stuff, but I don't chill with a lot of famous people. So the advice really came from my family and my friends, my real friends, where they were like, you've got something that is special, do not waste it. I'd say my manager as well, like, but I call him a friend because he's one of my best mates. He dragged me over and he said, like, I've seen a lot of people waste this. And he said this one thing where, like, I can get another one of you. But you can't be enough. As soon as you've done it, then it's done. And that hit me. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of people waiting in the queue, and I'm not ready to be at the back of it.
I want to talk about your latest album, but before we go to that, I want to ask you a bit about something you said about your second album, Evering Road. The album was named after the street where you lived with an ex, and I really liked what you said in an interview about this, because rather than framing it as like a breakup album or a heartbreak album, you described it sort of as like a thank you note. And I think that's such a healthy way to reframe previous relationships. And, you know, we have this kind of very toxic dialogue around exes where we're almost encouraged to slag them off and criticize them and, or, you know, in worst cases, label them psycho and all that kind of stuff. And actually to have a really healthy mindset on it and turn it into a positive thing and see, like, you know, this was meant to come to an end when it did, and call it something, and, you know, have that gratitude for it, I think is a really helpful message to people. So what kind of did you mean by that when you described it as a thank you note, and why were you so keen not to frame it as a sort of breakup vengeance album?
Because that time in my life taught me a lot about who I wanted to be, and also who I didn't want to be. And unfortunately, people got hurt, like, and I just wanted to put that message out and say, I realized that a lot of the mistakes I made were causing the problems in that relationship. So the thank you is to the road, the thank you is to her, and the thank you is for that chapter of my life. Like, it's one of those ones where some people are meant to meet, have their time, and teach each other lessons.
Mm.
And that's what it did. And I'll always be thankful for it.
Mm. And I think it's important not to look at anything like a romantic relationship that's come to an end as a failure, because it's not, like you said. Yeah, it's a lesson, and you can bring those lessons into your next relationships.
Yeah.
Which brings me on to my next question. You're engaged, so congratulations.
Thank you.
And I know you've previously kind of spoken about the importance of keeping your private life to yourself in your line of work, and I guess that kind of feeds into what we were talking about earlier about fame, and, you know, obviously people in the public eye get a crazy amount of attention when it comes to their love lives, even though, you know, what you're doing has nothing to do with that. I can imagine that is incredibly maddening and frustrating. How do you go about protecting your relationships from the public eye and keeping that to yourself? Because it's such an unnatural thing to have to think about, but of course you have to think about it.
Yeah, it is. It is a tough thing to always having to be thinking about just privacy in that world.
Mm.
Like, most of my friends, if not all of my friends who are in relationships, they and their partners always are posting about, especially like the world we live in, like everything is just plastered on online, you know? Whereas me, like, and my other half, we want to keep it just, it's our thing.
Mm.
And my other half, she doesn't work in at this industry. And I don't know, she just, and I want it to be for us. And what people need to know, they'll know. And what they don't need to know is they won't know.
Mm.
And again, it keeps it healthy, and it also kind of is real life, because all this weird world that we live in is usually not really real life.
Yeah.
And for me, that's real life, so yeah.
And also, the second you kind of let it in any way, it becomes a sort of unstoppable circus. So it's like, you know, I can imagine if you were to post one photograph of, you know, your partner, then it's like suddenly everyone wants more photos, and they're commenting.
And there's a lot of horrible people out there, and some people will just comment to be nasty, and I don't need that, and she doesn't need that.
Speaking of kind of like online brouhaha, there was obviously something that happened at the Brits this year. I just want to get your thoughts on how you feel about that. Now, I know you kind of like apologized to Ellie Goulding, and she tweeted being like, it's fine, like, it's not a big deal. But like, what do you make of the way that that was kind of...
Well, she tweeted that it was both of us who had the joke planned.
Yeah.
And it just went wrong.
If you both agree to it, like, it just seems so bizarre. Is it like, do you think the internet is just looking to cling on to anything to...
I think... it was a joke between two friends, and I think people are quick to try and cancel people.
Yeah.
And really, I should have known, but it's one of those things, and it was a joke between two friends.
I want to talk about the new album. You've said that you wanted to make something that helps people de-shackle, take risks, and realize their dreams. I already mentioned earlier, I was listening to it all morning. It's like, it's very upbeat. It kind of makes you want to get up and dance. It feels like very lively. Tell me a bit more about how this new album came together and what you kind of wanted to get across with it and why it's different to your previous two.
This album is the first album where I've really like felt I knew what I was doing. I feel like like we've just spoken about, I'm really... I'm a different person. When I look back at them two albums, like, wow, this is like a completely different person. But I'm happy. I'm in a place where physically, mentally, everything is just, I'm in a good place. And I think that really comes out in the music. I really wanted to, I feel like, I really wanted people to listen to this album and just dance and have fun, because I'm having fun right now. But I wanted to like put a message in it and just say like, spontaneity and taking risks and being able to feel comfortable in the uncomfortable is an amazing thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I've always been somebody who's comes into a room, and if there's like a door that I haven't been through, I'd always be like, what's behind that door? Because if you open a door, something great could be behind it. Mm-hmm. You just need to kind of have that risk in you and just be like, do you know what? If I dream about something or I want to do something, then it's only me who's going to make that happen. And that's what I want it to do. I want people to just listen to it and feel like they can be who they want to be, do what they want to do, and express themselves in the way they want to express. There's a lot of colour in this album.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's saying a lot.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Let's talk about the loves of your life. So the first one you've chosen, I have to admit, is not a subject I know very much about. So tell me why you have decided to choose football. I know it's such a cliche. I really don't know much about it. Why have you chosen football? I know obviously you said earlier that this was something that you really wanted to go into as a kid. Do you think that if it wasn't for music and kind of acting, you would be playing football professionally? No.
No. Wasn't good enough.
Do you still play? What is it that you love about it?
Yeah. When playing football, it's like 90 minutes usually, right? And that is a time where I'm just in the game. I'm zoned out. I'm not thinking about anything apart from scoring a goal or defending the ball. And I don't know, it's always been, for me, like just a place where I also feel comfortable. Like on stage, like that's my home, and I know it. Whereas football is, again, like even though I'm not that good, I still feel like I love it. And I know just a minute ago I said about being comfortable in the uncomfortable, but like football for me, like it's an uncomfortable place to be, but like I'm comfortable there. So I don't know, it's competitive. I love being competitive. I am competitive. It's time with your mates. You talk absolute nonsense and you then either win or lose a game. And then watching football is on the weekend is another like thing that I love to do, because again, I'm not thinking about music. I'm not thinking about anything. I'm just thinking about what's happening with the teams I'm watching.
Who do you support?
I grew up and I've always been a supporter of Man United, mm-hmm. but I have a massive like love for Coventry City too. I would say I'm United, but I'm also Coventry. And I don't know if you're allowed two teams, but I'm having them.
I think so. Yeah, do you have any favourite football chants?
Nah, I've not been that. I'm never that. I'm not really that guy. I will listen to people do it, But I'm not like a laddie lad nerd. Do you know what I mean? I'm not that guy. I'm a lover of it for sure.
How often do you play now?
Well, I've got soccer ready coming up, so at the moment I'm trying to play at least once or twice a week just to get in the mode for that. But like, if we always bring a football on tour, so we're always kicking a ball in different venues. But yeah, once or twice a week, I try to get playing.
I want to ask you a little bit about mental health, but I think that actually feeds into your second love, which is an animal. And I'm excited to hear about this because as a pet owner myself of a very ridiculous cat called Blanche Dubois, I understand.
Sick name.
Thank you. She's amazing. I need to stop. Honestly, I talk about her all the time. I'm surprised she's not here in the podcast. But yeah, I know how special they can be and how much they can change your life. So tell us a bit about Marmite, the dog you adopted, rescued.
Yeah, Marmite. He's a wicked dog. He is a Romanian rescue dog. He was found in a bin.
And oh my God.
I know. So sad. But so happy that he's in my life. So he was found in a bin and he was shown, I was like scrolling through different charities and stuff like that, and I found this one charity and I just loved the work they were doing, and I was like, I really want a dog, have you got any dogs? And they were like, we've got this one, he was tiny, and he's ready to come to England, do you want to come and see him? And then I saw him. And I don't know, we just loved each other straight away. And it turns out he's got the same birthday as me as well.
Really?
Yeah, is mad. But now he's like a massive horse. And because I'm so busy, my mum's had to look after Marmite.
Mm.
But my mum and my dad, they love him.
Oh,
and,
sweet.
And he loves them. But he came into my life at the right point as well. This is the time when I was doing a lot of what I spoke about already. Yeah. And
just kind of ground you a little bit.
He did. He was I had to kind of like just had this other life in my house and I was like, I cannot mess this up. And then luckily then lockdown happened and I moved back with my mum and dad. But he's wicked. He is nuts. But animals are just good for the soul.
Yeah.
They'll love you unconditionally.
Mm.
They won't judge you. They don't care if you're a singer. You know what I mean? They're like, you better walk me now.
Yeah.
You better pick my shit up. And you better play with me.
Yeah.
And that's what I like.
And how has having a pet kind of helped your mental well-being generally? Because I think, you know, obviously you mentioned the responsibility side of things gives you, I guess, an important sense of having to care for someone, well, something, someone, something?
Something, someone.
Someone.
Marmite.
Yeah. but yeah, how has having an animal kind of boosted your mental well-being, if you think it has? I mean, I'm sure it has.
Yeah,
it
definitely.
Has for me.
I think you're happy, ain't you?
Yeah.
Like you're not, there's never a dull moment really. And if you are a bit sad, like the animals know about it.
They do, don't they? My cat always knows if ever I'm like a bit upset or I'm crying, my cat will come and sit on me as if to like give me a cuddle.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really sweet.
Exactly. But I think being away a lot, and him having to live at my mum's house is, that's tough though, do you know what I mean? Because I'm like, I feel bad at my mum and dad, so I'm just like, can you have my dog for a long while? And, but I love it when I go, he's actually coming to mine tonight. So,
is he?
Yeah, I'm seeing him.
Oh, sweet. How big is he now?
Not that, he's like that. He's
really?
Like, nah, he's not that tall. He's about that tall.
Oh my gosh.
Tall. Yeah, huge.
Does
he
sleep on the bed with you?
No, he doesn't. No.
He's gonna take up quite a lot of space.
He's more of a guard dog though.
Oh really?
He's more like he sleeps on the landing, and yeah, he's just protecting as always. He doesn't really like men, if I'm going to be honest.
Really?
Nah.
That's interesting. I know a lot of rescue... Actually, my friend has a Romanian rescue dog and is the same, really doesn't like men.
Doesn't like men, so...
That's interesting.
Yeah, if a new person comes into the house, it's like... It's a process.
Finally, tell us about your third love, which is your family.
Yeah, family. I think everybody is... Everybody's family is... You can't choose them. Do you know what I mean? But the family that I've got are amazing. And I love them dearly and they love me dearly. My mum, she is so supportive, always has been. Me and my mum, we've got a special bond, me and my mum. I'm her rock and she's mine, do you know what I mean? And we've always just had that bond. I think sons and mums, they all have a special bond, don't they? So, yeah, my dad is up there with probably the funniest man I've ever met in my life and just the most caring, sweetest soul and like worships the floor my mum walks on and I've grown up like looking at that and witnessing that. And well, I'm lucky that my mum and dad are still together because most, if not every single one, apart from one friend, their mum and dad aren't together. So it kind of puts the foundation for the relationships that I want and the relationship that I have. I never want to not be like my mum and dad. So, yeah. Got my mum and dad, my brother as well, Kaelin. He's wicked. I call him a little G because he is
younger.
Yeah, 5 years apart, and again, doesn't like this life that I'm living doesn't faze him, and he's just a cool guy. That's what he is. I love him to bits.
I know you feature your dad sometimes in your podcasts and in like little videos that you do on TikTok and stuff. What do they make of the kind of starry, crazy attention side of your career?
And my mum and dad?
Yeah, like do you ever bring them to...
Yeah. My dad loves it. He thinks he is famous. If not, he is. He think like I went to... I was on tour and he's like, I've got to go. Got to go to the merch stand. I've got signatures
so
to sign
sweet.
And that. So yeah, but they're cool. They love it and they're just proud. And obviously, I'm like I say about family. Like I've also got my missus family that I'm really really tight with as well. And they're like they are my family now.
Yeah.
And I'm very very lucky that again like that I came into. My missus' life when all this was kind of happening and they've had to kind of adapt to this life as well. And they're, again, just so supportive and again, it doesn't really faze them. My grandma and granddad, I'm so close to my grandma and granddad and I've got too many cousins and I love it. It's a big family and I think family for me is the most important because they're the people that, when I say you can't choose them, they're the people that won't go anywhere and they won't judge you. They probably might judge you. My mum would call me a dickhead.
Yeah, that's not judging you though. I think that's bringing you back down to earth
when you
probably need it.
Yeah, exactly. But unconditional love, you know.
And have there been any moments in your career where things haven't been going well or you've been acting in a certain way that you're not proud of and they have been the ones to really give you the kind of like hard talking to you? And
that's why
you,
I moved home.
Yeah.
When my mum came to London and was like, nah.
Yeah. Well, particularly, I think people who get famous and get successful really young in the music industry, you know, that's like a sort of well-known trajectory for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Would you ever, like, given your own experiences of it, if you had children, would you ever be, like, wary about them going into music?
Nah. I think my mum and dad, again, like I've said about what the foundation, what is there. If and when I have kids, if they want to do what I do, then sweet. Like my missus, she was a dancer. I'm a singer.
Oh, cool.
And triple threat kids.
You start never a little musical theatre troupe.
Yeah, you never know what will happen.
That's it for today. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode of Love Lives, you can listen to all episodes on all major podcast platforms. You can also watch us on independent TV, social media platforms, and all connected devices. I will see you soon. Bye. Bye.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.